Okay, so tonight we're going to focus on a section of the Parsha, the story of Yehuda and Tamar. That's the part of the Parsha after Yosef is sold, and Yehuda separates him, he leaves the rest of his family, goes out on his own. He marries, he has three sons, Er, Onan, and Shelah. He takes for Er a wife named Tamar. Er dies. Yehuda tells Onan to marry Tamar. Onan dies. Yehuda tells Tamar to wait for Shelah. She goes back to her father's family. Nothing's happening. She's not being called back to marry Shelah. And therefore she decides to make a very bold move. And she disguises herself as a prostitute. She waits on the way for Yehuda to pass by. The story is that Yehuda propositions her. She takes basically security. She takes security from him. After being with her, she becomes pregnant. She goes back to her house. Yehuda finds out she's pregnant. He thinks that she has committed adultery. He's about to kill her. She shows him the different things that he had given her as security, and she says, "This is from who I have become pregnant. You know, do you reckon? You know." And he admits, "Tzadka mimeni, she was right. It's for me. She has twins. They name them Peretz and Zarach, and they are the ancestors of David HaMelech, King David, and Melech HaMashiach, and the Mashiach." That was just a quick review of the story. Now, if we look at the lineage of David HaMelech, this is part of that lineage. Yehuda and Tamar giving birth to Peretz and Zarach, and Peretz is an ancestor of David HaMelech. So David HaMelech is born from this very strange relationship. If we go back, there's an even more strange relationship that David is born from. That is because we know that David comes from Rus. Rus is a Moabite. The Moabites are descendants of Lot, who impregnated his daughters. And the child that came from Lot and his older daughter, she named the child Moab, which means from father. And Moab is again descendant of Rus. Rus eventually, after she converts, marries Boaz, she becomes the great-great-grandmother of David HaMelech. So we have again David HaMelech, and again, when we talk about David HaMelech, we're talking about Mashiach too, again, being born from a very, very strange, a very strange situation. The situation of Lot and his daughters, and Yehuda and Tamar. And later on, we get to the book of Rus. We also have a very funny situation where Rus basically sneaks into the silo where Boaz is sleeping, and she basically, does something to make him and her ready to cohabit. He says, "Wait, I can't do anything yet because, you know, there's somebody before me to marry you. And if he doesn't, then I will marry you." He marries her, and they again have great grandfather of David HaMelech. So the marriage itself between Rus and Boaz is not problematic, even though there is controversy around that also. But it's preceded by a very odd set of circumstances where Rus goes and does what she does to Boaz. And all the fact that all these very strange circumstances all come together and produce David HaMelech seems a bit odd. And the commentaries discuss what exactly was happening here. What exactly is happening in all these incidences that actually become the seeds of David HaMelech and Mashiach? Why does all this happen under very odd circumstances? So I'd like to share with you I'd like to share with you an explanation that comes from the Aruch Chaim, and that'll be the first explanation. But before that, I think it's important to mention a few midrashim that besides for the fact that we know the lineage of David HaMelech, you know, it's from his father's side, it's Yehuda and Tamar. From his mother's side, you have a lineage from Moab, you have a lineage from Yehuda and Tamar, you know, and we say, well, you see, David HaMelech was born, and you see Mashiach, and we know that Mashiach comes from David HaMelech. So just from looking at the history of things, we see that David HaMelech comes from here, and we're asking, How does it come about that David and Mashiach come out from such odd circumstances? But it's interesting to note how the Medrash points out at each stage here, at each stage of all these stories, which again are the lineage of David HaMelech, the Medrash points out how each part is another stage in bringing about Mashiach. So if we talk about the story of Lot, where Lot was hiding with his daughters in the cave, Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed, the daughters thought that the world was destroyed, they got their father drunk so that he should make them pregnant, so that they should populate the world. So the Medrash says like this, when we know that the Torah tells us the older one, you know, said to the younger one, we have to do something. So the Medrash says, Shahayu Siburesh Niskalo Elam Kedara Mabel. They thought that the world was destroyed. And then they said, let's go and give our father to drink wine. Rabbi Tanchuma Mishum Rabbi Shmuel. The sage, the Mishnaic sage, Rabbi Tanchuma said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel. Unechayeme Avinu Zara. And let us produce life. Let us produce seed. Let us bring life to seed from our father. Unechayeme Avinu Bein in Ksivkan. It doesn't say, let us bring about a son from our father. Let's bring seed from our father. I don't know exactly how to explain the wording of this medrash, but the fact that they use the word seed means to say that in their minds, there was more than just populating the world. It was rather that they have to produce the seed of Mashiach. This was something that they understood. From somewhere, they understood that what they have to do now is more than just populate the world. They need, in what they are going to do now, they need to bring the world to its perfection. They need to bring the world to its completion, which comes through Mashiach. They understood this. And I don't want to elaborate on this too much, but there's an interesting story that brings about the daughters of Lot. Even though they kind of, especially the older one, named her son in a way that really publicized what happened with her father, just looking at this medrash, you see, we're not talking about simple people. We're talking about people who seem to have had a broad knowledge, a broad perspective of what was going on, and that they were actually their intentions were good in the fact that they wanted to populate the world, that they wanted to bring about Melech HaMashiach. But the point I just want to bring up from the Medrash is that the Medrash is saying clearly that at this point is not just about, well, it happens to be that David comes out from this union. There is an understanding that this union is step number one for bringing about Mashiach. And the daughters of Lot understood they need to do this with their father to make that happen. Now, when we get to our parsha, the story of Yehuda and Tamar, so I want to share with you two Medrashim. One Medrash says, and this is based on the wording that the Torah says, if you look at page 208, which is right after Yosef was sold. It was at that time, and Yehuda went down from his brothers. So the Medrash comments that there's a lot of things that are going on here at the same time. And Shmuel bar Nachman, the sage Shmuel bar Nachman of the Medrash Pasach, he opens and he says, I know the thoughts. The tribes, what were they focused on? What were they involved? What were they busy doing? They sold Yosef. The Yosef was involved in mourning. He was just sold away to oblivion. Reuben, the older brother, who tried to save his brother, and they still sold him anyway. He also was involved in mourning over what he did with Bilhah. The Yaakov Yosek Masaka Batanisai. Yaakov was also involved in sackcloth and mourning and fasting because he lost his son. The Yehuda Yosek Likach Vayisha. Yehuda was busy looking for a wife. Vakadish Baruch Vayosek Bayre Yavishalom Melech Mashiach. And what's Hakadish Baruch doing at this time? He was involved in creating the light of the King of Mashiach. Now, I'm not going to go through this medrash. What the Medrash means to say how all these things coming together, like the Medrash says we have all these different things going on. This one's doing this, this one's doing this. What's HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing? He's involved in creating the light of Mashiach. How do the other things mentioned, Yaakov, Reuven, Yosef, how they all contribute to creating the light of Mashiach? I'm not going to get into that right now. But But we also mentioned, the Medrash also mentioning Yehuda. Yehuda is asik to get himself is involved in finding himself a wife. After everything that's been happening with the sale of Yosef, and Yehuda somewhat being blamed for what happened with Yosef, and he leaves his brothers, and now he goes looking for a wife, what is that part of? It's part of creating the light of Mashiach. Again, the Medrash is telling us, this is another stage to that. Next, we know that, let's take a look at this next pasuk, because it's going to be an important pasuk to know. Take a look on page 210. It says, on Pasuk Tesvav, this is four lines from the top of the page, 210, Vayireha Yehuda, Yehuda saw her, referring to Tamar, Vayachshevah Lezayna, and he thought that she was a prostitute. Ki chisas ha-panah, because she covered her face. Vayet Eileha El Haderach. So what did he do? He detoured towards her to the path where she was sitting. Vayarman, he said, Havarev Eileach, he propositioned her. So on these words, where it says "Vayet al aderech," that he detoured towards her, Amar Rabbi Yechanan said, "Bikesh lavar Yehuda." The fact that Torah says that he detoured towards her, that really means to say that he really wanted to pass by. He had no intention of approaching her. V'zimulei Hakadosh Baruch Hu malach shumamuna lataiva. So Hakadosh Baruch Hu sent an angel, whose job is he's in charge of creating passion, creating desire. And he sent that malach to Yehuda. Omar loy, figuratively, the angel said, Yehuda, where are you going? Where will kings come from? From where will great people come from? And after that, what happened? He was going one way and he changed his path to go to her. He did it against his will, not for his good. Meaning, Yehuda, the Medrash is telling us from the words Vayet El Haderech, it didn't just say he went over to her, Vayet El Haderech, he detoured towards her. He went away from one path and went towards her. That means to say that he never planned, he never planned on doing it. But he was forced. Hashem forced him. He didn't know it was his daughter-in-law. He never would have propositioned to Zayna. But Hashem sent the Malach. That's basically saying to Yehuda, you can't pass this by. This is where kings are going to come from. This is where great people are going to come from. And therefore, the Malach now filled him with so much passion, so much desire, he couldn't help himself. But it was all because this is the union that must take place for all these great people to come from. So again, the Medrash is telling us that at that stage itself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is preparing the coming of Mashiach. And then the last medrash I want to mention to you is a medrash from the book of Rus, where it talks about that when Rus first met Boaz when she came to glean, and Boaz invited her to eat, and before she left, Boaz went ahead and he measured out certain amounts and he gave it to her to take back to Naomi. It says in matter of those measures, what came out from them together, a number of great people, David, Chizkiyo, Melech HaMashiach. Again, just showing how every stage, the Medrash shows us how each stage of each stage of these episodes in the history that starts from Lot to Yehuda to Rus and Boaz, each one is meant to be another stage in the creation of David and Melech HaMashiach. But so now we need to understand why do they happen under such strange and bizarre circumstances. That's the question. Why do they happen under such bizarre circumstances? Okay, so the first explanation I want to share with you comes from the Arachayim. This is very Kabbalistic. And maybe some of these concepts you've heard. And to be honest with you, do I fully understand these concepts? No. But the Arachayim says them. They're Torah. And I think it's worthwhile that we, even if we don't fully grasp them, that we get a little taste of these concepts. Okay? So the Aruch Chaim is on this week's parsha. It's actually in Parshas Vayechi, where this is a comment that he gives when Yaakov is blessing Yehuda before he dies, and it's here where the Aruch Chaim delves into this episode of Yehuda and Tamar. So he says like this. He starts with the following principle, the following idea. He says, Yisbar raksuvim al piyakdama achazaka ubara asher ira einenu v'devarim nachmadim ma'ar tarasenu. V'hu. Ki adam arishayin hu ilan shabayayu tluyim kal neshamet shal kedusha. Adam arishayin, the first man, was a tree upon which all holy souls sheyatzu la'aylam that came out to the world v'yem hayayis la'aylam from the day the world was created v'asher asidin latzeis, and that would in the future come out. When Adam Arisha was created, he was like a tree that had. This is the way I'm going to say it, the way I can understand it. He calls him a tree upon which all holy neshamas were hanging from. Every neshama that was ever meant, every holy neshama that was ever meant to be created from the beginning of the world to the end of the world, all those neshamas were, so to speak, in Adam Arishin, hanging on Adam Arishin. When he was created with all these neshamas. Ukashachata, and when he kashachata Adam, and when Adam sinned, shalat chayla kara, the power of evil was able to be strengthened, it was able to overpower. We know there was a power of evil, that's the Nachash. The Nachash represents the power of evil that existed in the world, even by Adam Arishin. And once the power of evil got him to sin, what happened was the power of evil was now able to overpower. Vayish bimenu shevi le'ein mispar. You know what the power of evil did? It took away myriads and myriads of all those neshamas. A tremendous number, a huge number of those neshamas that were, so to speak, attached to Adam Arishin, once he sinned, the power of evil had the ability now to basically capture and take away all those millions of holy neshamas.
Maybe penetrate is a better word to take away. Because
let me finish how he says it, okay? Then I'll leave what you said. V'darshu me'al sefer anshe emes ma'otzmu hashvuyim me'hakadusha b'klipa. The tremendous amount is just this unbelievable number of captives from holiness, beklipa. I've never heard that term. Klipa means in the shell. There is this concept of klipa, of shell. And all these neshamas are captured and captive in that shell. That's why he uses that word. Because again, these are all physical descriptions to spiritual concepts, to God, to heavenly concepts. But that's how he phrases it. So when Adam Arishin was created, he had attached to him, I don't know what the right word is, but he's like a tree. He calls him like a tree. A tree has fruit. And this tree of Adam had all these neshamas on him, attached to him, hanging from him. And when he sinned, the power of evil was able now to capture many, many, many neshamas, many, many holy neshamas. If you were part of Adam Arishin, you're a holy neshama. And all these holy neshamas that were supposed to, again, were supposed to come out into the world from the beginning of time to the end of time, many, many, many of them were all captured, and they were put into the klipa, into the shell, into what we call the shell of evil. Without trying to borrow terms that we have in present day entertainment, you know, we would call this the dark side. They were captured into the dark side, and v'hein am Hashem. Now he continues, v'hein am Hashem mishtad l'meyem hayesam. The nation of God now attempts, from the day that they came into being, levarer ulahaitzi bolay mipiv. Their job now is to try to take out those neshamas that have been swallowed up from the mouth of evil. And they continue and cleanse and remove from his power through the source of holiness that Hashem has implanted within us. These are the Torah and mitzvahs. We, through our Torah and mitzvahs, what are we doing? We, through Torah and mitzvahs, are freeing these neshamas. These holy neshamas, whatever they're supposed to be, these holy neshamas that are supposed to be able to be free and existing in the world, They were captured. I don't know if it means all of them, many of them, but it says many, many of them were all captured by the Klipa. They're all captured for the power of evil and captive in what we call the Klipa, the shell of evil. And we, when we became a nation, I'm assuming that means when we received the Torah and Mitzvahs, now our job is for Torah and Mitzvahs to free them. That's the way they become free. We, through the power of Torah and Mitzvahs, can overpower the evil, the power of evil, and remove them, and be able to cleanse them, and remove them from the shell. So that's, so to speak, step number one. How do these neshamas get out of that shell of evil? They get out of that shell of evil through our Torah and Mitzvahs. That's number one. The next thing that's going to, the Aruch Haim is going to discuss, are the other means by which these neshamas of Kedusha, these neshamas of holiness, are able to be freed from the klipa, from the shell of evil. And then now he says, Kam l'pa'amin. Then there are times, b'mtzayis tevekas ha-nefesh ha-kedusha v'nefesh ha-tuma l'ainza. There will be times where a holy soul will become attached to an impure soul l'ainza, against its will, but through that toitzi nefesh chaya l'mina, it will be able to extract the living soul to its kind. Let me just continue. The v'hu said, and this is the deeper meaning of Atidbak Nafshay Bedina Bas Yaakov, last week's Parsha, Shechem kidnapped and violated Dina. And it says that after he violated her, Atidbak Nafshay Bedina Bas Yaakov, his soul connected. His soul clinged to Dina Bas Yaakov, which we translate in the simple sense to mean he became attached to her, emotionally attached. He became infatuated with her. But he says the deeper meaning of what happened when his soul, the soul of Shem, became attached to Dina, the daughter of Yaakov, that means Sheshava Nefesh Dina Kedusha, the holy soul of Dina drew out Lenefesh Kedusha Mina, another holy soul like her, that was inside of Shem. This idea of a soul in a klipa doesn't only mean, the klipa is not just this kind of spiritual entity somewhere. You can have a Shechem, who's nefesh tameah. His soul is impure. He doesn't have a pure soul. Look what he acted, look what he did. He doesn't have a pure soul. But in his pure soul, he himself, his impure soul, is actually, again, if I understand it correctly, a klipa. It's a shell that's holding captive a holy soul. But once he has this connection of his soul, which is impure, to the soul of Dina, and of course Dina didn't want to do this, these two souls aren't meant to connect. But sometimes they connect against the will of the holy soul, which was the story with Dina. But once that connection is made, the holy soul is able to draw out the captive holy soul in the Russia, in the Tamei soul. When Shechem, when his soul became attached to Dina, what happened was, is that it's almost like, you know, again, I feel a little silly using these analogies, but again, you have a magnet, right? So the two magnets, one magnet pulls against the other. When you have, so Dina's holy soul was like that magnet that pulled out the holy soul that was captive in the impure soul of Shechem. By coming together again through intimacy, that kind of very strong connection that takes place between two people in intimacy, that connection actually allowed the holy soul of Dina to draw out from Shechem a holy soul that was captive in him. That's the deeper meaning, says the Aruch Hayim, of Atidbak Nafshei, of Shechem's soul becoming attached to Dina. The attachment actually allowed Dina to draw out a holy soul. And whose holy soul was that? Would you like to know who it was? The holy soul, V'omru Zal, and the Medrash says, whose soul was that? K'nefesh Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan. There is a very famous sage, a Tana from the Mishnah, Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan. His soul, his neshama, was a neshama that was taken captive in the tamei soul, in the klipa soul of Shechem, and it was Dina's holy soul that was able to free it and that eventually will become the soul of Chanina ben Traje. And he says, "Ruhu remez rachvas yadayim." There's an allusion to this, that it's Rabbi Chanina ben Traje. Because if you look back in last week's parsha, parsha's Vayishlach by that whole story. So what happens? Here it is. Look at page 182. Last week's parsha. Look at the very last line of the page. This is where Shechem and Hamor are convincing the people of their city to get a bris milah so that we could all become one nation. So the pasuk reads, "Va'nashma ha'ila," these people, "Shleimim mitanu," they are peaceful with us. "The yeshu ba'aretz v'yischaru aisa," they'll live in the land, they'll do business in it. "The aretz," and the land, "in a rachavas yadayim lefneihem," the land is wide open before them. You see that word rachavas, resh, ches, beis, tuf? You know that, you know, we can take each letter and make it count and make it stand for a word. Resh is Rabbi, ches is Chanina, beis is Ben, tuf is Trajan. Okay, he's saying hinei rachavas yadayim. Chanina ben Trajan is here. He got out. So again, this is all very deep and mystical interpretation. But what he's trying to show here is that this is another means, again, it's a very odd means, but it's another means by which a nefesh can be freed from the klipa in which it's trapped. When you have this connection of the two, when you make this kind of connection, when a nefesh tameya, when an impure soul, which is itself a klipa that holds a captive a nefesh, when it comes together, when it becomes close and attached and clings to a holy nefesh, the connection between the two allows the holy nefesh to draw out the holy nefesh that's captive in the klipa. That's another means by which it gets freed. Now here, listen to the next one. Ulapa'amim teitzei ha-nefesh me'atzma le'olam. Now sometimes, this holy soul can actually get out from the klipa and be able to go out in the world as it's supposed to on its own. How? Litzad hashratzas nefashas haklipa ba'olam teitzei gam hi. Okay? What can happen like this? Just trying to translate what's going on here. There, he calls this, he says that it can happen, you can have hashratzas nefashas haklipa. Okay. This klipa, this shell, right, has taken captive holy souls. The klipa also contains unholy souls. The nefesh of Shechem was an unholy soul. And the klipa releases unholy souls into the world. Well, when there's a release of unholy souls into the world, a holy soul can kind of grab on, like when the window opens, it can push itself out too. It kind of gets a chance to escape. And it does. It gets a chance to escape. Okay, now, ubetseisa, and when it gets out, it's now separated from the shell. So what does this holy soul want to go? Where does it want to go? What does it want to do? It wants to now go on the proper path. It wants to go where it's essentially a holy soul. It wants to now be, and now wants to go on the right path. It wants to do what a holy soul is supposed to do. V'hu soid nishmas ha'gerim ha'miskayrim me'atzmam v'choshkim l'stayfeif b'tzal ha'kdusha. This is a deeper understanding of the soul of converts who convert on their own and desire to come under the shade of holiness. When a non-Jew decides that they want to be Magai, they want to convert, what is that? What's going on there? It's the ultimate question, right? What's going on in this person? Says the Aruch Chaim, what's going on is that the nefesh in that person, that's one of the freed neshamas. That's one of the freed neshamas that now wants to, okay, it got out of the klipa, okay? It got out of the klipa, separated from the klipa. But now it's got a, perhaps it means that while it was in the klipa, it was affected in some way. But whatever it is, because this it wants to know how to go on the proper path. Now again, it sounds like this nefesh, this holy nefesh that got out of the klipa, right? It doesn't sound like it's going into a Jew. It seems like it's going into a non-Jew. But that's the soul that freed itself. It wants to go on the right path. And this is what's going on in a deeper sense inside a person wants to convert. Because what's inside that person is that holy neshama that freed itself from the klipa and now wants to be able to come to the place where it really is supposed to be, which is to serve Hashem in Torah mitzvahs.
This begs the question. Do non-Jews have souls?
Yes.
So what happens to the old soul when that happens? They need to fight or something.
What?
They have to fight or...
Well, it seems like the Ger's neshama is different. I mean, according to this explanation, right? I'm just saying, you know, it seems like what he's saying is that we know from different sources that a Jewish soul is different than a non-Jewish soul. It seems like you have something in between. It seems like something in between when a person wants to convert. What's happening there is that his soul, right, is essentially the holy soul that was in the klipa. Apparently, it's not going to go into a Jew's neshama. It has to go through some kind of a process. It's got to go through a process of geiris. So it's like something in between. So it's not like he had an old soul. He actually has. He's starting off with a soul, with a holy soul that was captured by the klipa, and now wants to get where it's supposed to really go. Does that answer your question?
Well, I'm not sure what happened with the old one.
I'm saying there's no old one. That soul, which was a holy soul that was captured, right? Now, through Geiris, it's able to get where it's really supposed to go.
No, but that means that person had no soul before that?
No, he had a soul that was released from the klipa. A soul that's released from the klipa is a soul that wants to now be able to get to its fullest potential with Torah mitzvahs.
Oh, so you believe it happened on day one, but that person was born?
Yeah. On day one, he had that neshama.
I thought that happens when the person decides to
come. Yeah, I would actually agree with you until we saw this.
Right, okay.
Until we see this, I would agree with you that, you know, he's got neshama from a guy. Something happens in his head, he makes a decision, and now and what would happen then? Somehow or another, he gets a new one. You know, it's like the old one goes away and he gets a new one. Or somehow or another, the old one turns into something new. According to the Aruch Chaim, there is something like that happening, right? Because it seems that, again, the soul that was in the klipa, right, now that it's free, so it's free, like, why doesn't it land up by a Jew? I don't know, maybe it does. But he seems to say that maybe it does. He doesn't say not. But he still said, but sometimes it's going to land up by, I shouldn't say sometimes. The way he says it is, the souls that were able to escape, right? These souls now, that they're free from the klipa, they want to now go where they're supposed to go. Since they basically landed up in the klipa, they now have to go through some kind of a process that will bring them back to where they were supposed to originally be, so to speak. But what's happening inside the ger is the fact that it's one of those escape neshamas. That's what the ger is. It's an escape neshama that now wants to have a chance to be where it was always meant to be, which is in the truest form of kedusha, which is in fulfilling Torah mitzvahs. Okay. So far, we have Torah mitzvahs that are freeing the neshamas from the klipa. You can have the union between a impure soul and a pure soul, where the pure soul is able to draw out the holy soul that is captive in the klipa of that impure soul. And now we have this concept of an escaped soul. One of those holy souls that was taken captive from the time of the Chet of Amadarishan, it escapes. And now it wants to be able to go back to where it was meant to be. Okay. Now, one more. We've got one more approach. Okay. Ubachal davar zeh gam kein beemtzos davar maguna biyoser yivchar ashavoy shu adam liyal ohitzi nefesh hakadusha sheshvuya biyadai b'makim klipa shebechinas oven shiya yoser maguna. Okay. What I believe he's saying here is like this. There's another means of releasing the nefesh, and that is in the following way. The way he describes it is that, you know, the klip is holding on to the nefesh. And there's a kayach hara, some kind of an evil power that's basically holding back these neshamas. And it would seem like, again, my understanding, is that there are some of those neshamas that are in the klipa are very, very, very unique. Very special neshamas. Not all the same. And some of them, the power is going to hold on to them desperately. They're not getting out fast. But what will be able to release them is when an act that is especially despicable, especially, he calls it davar maguna b'yoser, an act that is really deplorable. By the means of a very deplorable act, the captor will allow the holy soul that is imprisoned by him in the shell to go out. Meaning, it's my understanding. Well, read a little bit more, but I'm trying to figure out the words. But the klipa, right? This shell of evil is the equivalent of sin. Sin is a very maguna. What was the word I used before? It's a very lowly state of being. A person is a sin. Person is in a very lowly state. This klipa that holds on to the nefesh, is also in itself the same state of sin. If a person now does an act that is essentially very sinful, that very sinful act now, so to speak, allows him almost to enter the klipa. And when he gets into the klipa, those holding down the nefesh release it. It's almost like if you can get into the dark side, if you can enter the dark side, if you can get in there, you will be that they will release the nefesh to you. They will release the nefesh to you. I'm not sure if it's because they're tricked or something. I don't know exactly. I don't think that's what our Chaim is working with. If you, not every one of us, you'll see, but if there's someone that if a certain type of person can enter that dark, dark side, if he gets really able to get deep into it, which is where these very holy neshamas are being held captive in the strongest way, in the darkest place, if you can get into that dark, dark area, they will release that holy neshama to you. And the only way to get into that very, very dark place is by doing a very, very dark thing. And this is how he explains the story of Lot and his daughters. Okay. V'yesha chol adas. I'm sorry, I better back up. V'zelach ha'ois. And I'll show you a sign, and I'll give you an illustration of this. Rus ha'moivia. Rus, the Moabite. Yotzes ha'biznus av ubitai. That great woman came out from a incestuous act between a father and his daughter. V'na'ama Amonis, another great woman, Nama, who was from Amon. V'tavken l'das, and focus on the fact, take notice, ki Rus sheyatasa mimeno shalshelas malchus beis David, Rus, who from her came out the chain, he came out the line of the Davidic dynasty, haisa mimayav, she came from Mayav, she balas avera b'chatzifus yoser. She called her son after her father. That essentially is a really brazen thing to do. The other one said, Amun, from my nation. Dothan said, "Moa, from my father." That in itself is a very brazen thing. That is so brazen. That's more brazen than the other one. And Rus comes out of that one. Rus, who from her comes David HaMelech Mashiach, comes out of the more brazen one. That means the darker act is actually bringing out the more holy soul. Okay? V'yesh HaKaladas. Now he says another thing. The Archaim is letting us know, right, that you can't be an anybody to be able to do this. You can't be not every Tom, Dick, and Harry, right, who does such a terrible act, right, has the ability to enter into the dark side to release these great neshamas. Not everybody can do that. You have to be a Lot. And as problematic as Lot was, with all the shortcomings that Lot had, Lot was still from the higher level. Let me just finish, okay? Lot was from the higher level. And there, Lot was not your simple low-life person. Lot clearly, you know, he wasn't. Let me read you the words. El Litzad Lot Shayagadu Bebechinasai Kigam Bechinas Hara Yesh Bei Hadragas Kadai Lutzul Lamalim Izu Kli Bechinasa. He puts Lot in the side of Ra. But he says, even in the side of Ra, there's a lot of different levels. So even if Lot has some serious shortcomings, he's from the higher end. He's from the higher end. And he's probably from a higher end that we don't have an understanding exactly of even what Lot's level was. But he's a higher end of the spectrum of those that aren't necessarily righteous.
Except that he didn't do anything.
You're right. But he did it. At the end, it was him. That's the point. He didn't have to get by. You're not supposed. By the way, it seems like you're not supposed to intend this. You're not supposed to intend this.
But except the daughter didn't.
Yes, she did. Her kavanah was good. Her kavanah was good. That is true. He doesn't mention that in this context. But what he's saying is that and Lot was no tzaddik when he did it. He was no tzaddik when he did it. I mean, he was drunk. But he's clearly, the fact let himself to get drunk, and it says he realized what happened, and he let himself get drunk again. All right? Clearly, very problematic. Still, says Darachayim, he's the Lot. And because he's a Lot, the student of Avram Avinu, he can be the one that his despicable, lowly, sinful act will actually be the means by which the Klipo will release these very holy neshamas. These are super holy neshamas. The Klipa doesn't want to release them. It's holding on strong. But if now there's another act from someone that is worthy, if someone that is worthy somehow or another lands up doing this very dark act, which allows him now to get so close to the depths of the Klipa, he can get so close to that power that holds on to the holy neshamas, he'll be able to release it. And then he says, and this is explanation of Yehuda and Tamar. Okay. V'usayram z'al b'zayar. No, that's something else. V'al piyak damazu. And with this introduction, that's some introduction. Taskil atzas Hashem ashirats al Yehuda. We'll now understand Hashem's plan with Yehuda. As read from the Medrash, Hashem sent an angel who forced him to get together with her. Being that the means here was something that was terribly wrong, al pi Torah, to cohabit with your daughter-in-law. And being that Yehuda really, he was anas al pi hadibur, it was against his will. Ne'alam dvar iser mimenu, right? There was no matter of prohibition from him, right? He didn't know it was his daughter-in-law, had no idea it was her. He was forced into the act itself. He didn't know it was his daughter-in-law. It was now from this he was able to bring out from the source of impurity Anaf Mufla, an unbelievable, a wondrous branch, Anaf Mufla Shabakadusha, a wondrous holy branch of holiness. Peretz Vizarach. Peretz Vizarach, Shayu Shvuyim Bibachina Sarah, they were captive within the evil. He says, and the evil man was squatting on them because of their great level. And look what came out. Meaning, see what kind of the shamas we were talking about. Vizulas Yehuda Shubachinas Hamalucha. And if it would not have been Yehuda, who himself was at this level of king of monarchy of Yehuda, always seemed to have that attribute, was always meant to be that king. No one else could have gotten these neshamas out. And also, if not for this seeming very evil act, that he should have with his daughter-in-law, there was no way to take them out. But by the means of this very evil appearance, he now enters into the evil, into the evil dwelling place. For Haitzi Shalal Rav, he was able to take out Shalal Rav, a great find. It was like a war, and he came out with riches of booty, of loot. So you see the way he says it at the end. You have to be a special person who somehow or another does this terrible act, but through that, you the terrible person doing that, you the great person doing that terrible act, you now enter into the Madah Hara, you enter into the evil area, into the darkest side where they're sitting on these holy neshamas and don't want to let them out or doing whatever they can to let them out. If you can get in there, they will have to release it. And those were the neshamas of Peretz Vizarach.
All right,
what do you say to that one, huh? It's tiring just getting through it. Right. So just you could say, Barthes, give me this. I'll give you. Don't worry, you have a chance. But what we had here in the Arachayim was the question was, David HaMelech from Lot and his daughters, David HaMelech from Yehuda and Tamar. Why in such crazy? Why such a crazy way? The answer is because we have here a situation where we needed very unique means by which to be able to release, and bring out very holy neshamas. You had on one side the neshamas that had to come out from through Lot and his daughters, right? Lot and his daughters. That act between Lot and his daughters, which he called, how did he explain that one? That was the act, that's the same thing, right? That's the very dark act of Lot with his daughters that releases the neshamas of Rus, to release the neshama of Rus, and you need the very dark act of Yehuda to release the souls of Peretz and Zarah. Because what we had here were very holy neshamas that were taken captive by the power of evil, and the only way to be able to release them out from the klipa, they should now be able to go and become and do what they're meant to do, could only happen through these special people doing this very evil act, which in Lot's situation really was an evil act, but I guess you could say he also was somewhat honest because he was drunk, right? But they're doing this very evil act, an act that clearly in itself appears very evil. Maybe you can't officially chalk it up to evil because they didn't do a prohibition, they weren't doing something wrong at the time, but inherently it's an evil act, and it's only these special people doing that evil act that allows him to go deep into the dark side to release these very holy neshamas that the power of evil is holding on to very strongly.
Except he had no idea that he's doing
it. Nope. Correct. No idea. No idea.
All right. So in the beginning, you said that we... It's almost, I forgot how exactly you said it, that it's almost our obligation in life to help free these souls?
Well, when you, I'll let you finish. Okay. And it's not like when we do Torah mitzvahs, right? We're supposed to be thinking about, you know, it doesn't mean that when I'm doing Torah mitzvahs, I'm doing it so I can release souls.
So he gives us four ways of doing that.
Right. And four ways how it happens.
Before the last half a page, I wanted to tell you that two of these four ways are really horrible because it encouraged people to do horrible things. Bad things in some cases.
Which ways?
What? There are four ways to free these neshamas, and what I was planning to say about two of them are really a bad idea. One is because the last one has encouraged people to do horrible things, which he addressed at the very end, so I take it back. But the other
you're saying it encourages people. It would encourage people, and how did that get answered?
Well, it got answered by the end. He said that A, that people don't know, and B, that only very, very special people could do it. So at least that sort of answered.
These people, like you pointed out, these people weren't doing it intentionally.
Right. However, he didn't say anything about intimacy between Jew and non-Jew, which it could be interpreted because we're sort of supposed to help these poor neshamas to go out and be intimate with non-Jews.
Yeah. You're saying that would encourage that?
It does. I want to help this poor soul, so that I should go out right now and be intimate with somebody, and hopefully somebody will come out of that. This is scary.
No. No.
Why no?
Because
what happened here?
You're talking about here, but you did by. Well, first of all, you remember by Shechem and Dina?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
You're talking about by the Shechem and Dina part, right? So, first of all, he said that he said the word where there's a connection between the pure soul, where there's a connection between the impure soul and the holy soul against its will.
Okay, so I have to go rape soul.
I was waiting for that. Let's see. How do we answer that? I mean, the answer, I think, is that it can't be done. It can't be done in a forbidden manner.
Except he did.
Shechem did it, but Dina didn't. Shechem did it. It was against Dina's will. It doesn't say Dina could. It doesn't say. What I'm trying to say is that Dina's soul was able to draw out the holy soul, as he says, it's like one type is able to connect to the other type, pull out the other type. That was like my magnet analogy. That was only happening again when the whole connection was against her will. If the holy soul is doing it in the wrong way, it's not going to work. Dina didn't do it intentionally.
I don't even want to say what I want to say.
What?
Well, because that means that we need to encourage non-Jews to...
No, we're not supposed to encourage them.
He didn't say anything about it. He just said, this is how it comes out.
Oh, so you're asking that the same way Shechem, right, did something wrong and it was able to happen, right, then we should that this could encourage... If they would find out about this, they would say, let's do this for that.
Right.
Okay. So, okay, that's it. Do you hear his question? Here's the question.
Yeah.
If you have questions, we'll give you a chance to ask questions too.
Yeah.
Right? This is his question, right?
Yeah.
His question would be, this concept could possibly encourage non-Jews to do that.
Yeah.
Okay? So...
Is this a good thing?
Well...
This was conflict with everything else, whatever happens, whatever we taught before.
He's talking about this thing itself, right?
I understand it, but it's something here that is we don't understand, something here that is sort of definitely blessed by, from above.
Well, the question is in what way, well, it's hard to use the word blessed, but you're saying it's part, it can become part of a plan.
Yes.
Now, one thing that I would say that I was thinking similar to what Alex is saying is that this is not going to answer your question completely. It's not. I was going to say that, maybe it can only happen to Adina.
Oh, okay, but he didn't say that.
You're right. He pointed it out in this in the other explanation of Lot and Avraham. He pointed it out, but Indini didn't point it out. But I wouldn't be so scared to say that. I wouldn't be so scared to say that that maybe you need a Dina, maybe you need a Nefesh like Dina to do that.
Well, but if it's only one case, why single it out into one big?
True, true. Clearly he's trying to say that that's a precedent. That's a precedent. You don't encourage it because it's not supposed to be done. Like Alex is saying, it's only going to happen, right? I see what you're saying, Alex. It's only going to happen when it's. Shouldn't say it's only going to happen. It's only we don't know when that's going to happen. No one's saying it happens every single time it happens. It's a means by which it could happen. It doesn't mean though that every single time it's going to happen. And therefore, the damage that actually comes from such an act, right? We would never want to encourage anybody to do it because of the fact that if it doesn't, let me backtrack. What do you want to say?
There are certain things we cannot explain on a low level.
Correct.
There are certain things that, you know, they all know what's going to happen afterwards. They all a little bit of a prophet and they know the plan. Let's assume that. Well, if they don't know, then somebody who controls it knows. And we are here sitting trying to, you know, explain sort of at a very low level is absolutely impossible.
Okay, so, but even if that's so, how would you address Boris's issue? So you're addressing it by saying, you know, if, you know, every guy, because again, maybe it is possible, if we don't want to say it only happens by Adina, right? But even then, you could say so. Maybe go find some very righteous woman to do it to. You're not. If we say, like you said, right, it's not going to happen every single time this way. You can't say that every single time. You're not going to say every single time it happens that it happens, right? When does it happen? We don't know. But it could happen this way. It's a means by which it could happen, right? So, will this become an excuse for every guy to say, oh, I should do this because in case that'll happen? And what if it doesn't happen? What if it doesn't happen? What if it doesn't happen?
What did he lose?
What did he lose? He hurt someone. If he was only doing it to release neshamas, yeah. Then if he didn't release the neshama, he hurt someone. That's number one. If you want to break it down to that, right? You want to take a chance? I don't know. But you're taking a chance. That's number one. You're taking a chance because he says it's going to work. Okay. Number two, you know, it's not like Dina. Even if it happened this way by Dina, it's not like Dina walked out unscathed. Unscathed because of it. It hurt her. You know, according to many, she didn't want to leave. She didn't want to leave. He had to fight a war, right, and schlep her out. She didn't want to leave. It had an effect on her. So, as Alex is saying, there's a lot that goes on within this kind of situation. And there's something very deep and secretive that happens that Hashem has it orchestrates a certain way of things happening the way it should happen, you know. But it's not like it's going to happen every single time, and it's not like there aren't even positive negative effects from it. But again, anything that happens is orchestrated from the Rebbeinu Shleilam, and part of that orchestration is going to be that through this the neshamas will be released. So you're not going to make so somebody decides to make a new movement, you know, a new movement to say we have to, you know, we are the releasing neshamas from the klipa movement, right? We're out there to release neshamas from the klipa. You got to realize that number one, no one is told to release neshamas from the klipa. No one is told release neshamas. Everyone is told to follow the word of Hashem. That's what they're told. We are being told that when you do that. One of the intention of the Rebbeinu Shleilam doing and having us after our mitzvahs is to release those neshamas. But there's no such thing as, okay, everybody, I need your help. Release those neshamas. No, that's not what it is. You have to follow the word of Hashem. When you follow the word of Hashem, you will be releasing neshamas, right? But you can't transgress the word of Hashem to release neshamas. Hashem never said to do that. Will it, at the same time, in Hashem's mysterious ways, right? there could be an act that's a sinful act that will actually bring about the freeing of the neshama. It will. It may do that. Does every single one do that? Maybe not. But step number one, I think, to answer your question is that we're not out, no one is being told, no one has a mitzvah to release neshamas. Your mitzvah is to follow the word of Hashem. That will release neshamas. We are being, we're privy to something deeper going on in Hashem's world. But what we're doing, what we have to do is the word of Hashem. So you can't, okay, go ahead and do this. That's not what you're supposed to be doing. At the same time, will it do something? Yeah. Will it always do? That may also be another thing. Who says it happens every single time? All right.
Thank you, Rabbi. Yeah.
Okay. Have a good night.
Maybe I should stop this. And then. Okay. I'll stop it.